It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's been called the United Nations of Writers, and it's right here in Iowa. This hour, conversations with writers from around the world who've just arrived in Iowa. We're talking about the International Writing Program based at the University of Iowa. Since 1967, over 1,400 writers, think about that, 1,400 writers from more than 140 countries have taken part in the University of Iowa's International Writing Program residency. This hour, we're going to talk with several who have just arrived. 36 writers from 30 countries have arrived within the last few days. Of course, we don't have room in our studios for 36 writers. We have four really illustrious, interesting writers to come in this hour. A little later in the hour, we'll speak with a writer from the island nation of Mauritius. You know where that is? You might want to look it up. I didn't know until a little while ago. Also, a Venezuelan musician and author coming up as well. First of all, joining us, International Writing Program Director Christopher Merrill in our studio. Chris, welcome to the program, and it's always such a joy to see you with your smile because you've just welcomed all these writers. I know it's a long, hard work to get so many writers from around the world here, but congratulations on that feat, and welcome to the program. Tell us about this year's group.
Thank you, Ben. It's a great pleasure to be back. As you said, we have 36 writers from 30 countries. They go through a rigorous selection process, and they come here for 3 months of giving readings and panel discussions, engaging in all sorts of creative activities, and really more than anything, engaging with communities in Iowa City and around the state of Iowa and then around the country. So we have poets and fiction writers, playwrights and filmmakers, musicians, artists, a whole range of creative individuals.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get that contact information right now and at the end of the program as well. This will be posted online. But there are so many events that these writers are involved in, ways in which Iowans can get in contact with these writers from all these different countries. Give us that contact information right at the start, and we'll mention it again.
Just go to our website, iwp.uiowa.edu. That's iwp.uiowa.edu. And you'll see there schedules and biographies of the writers, samples of their work. We have readings 2 days a week, Fridays and Sundays. We have panel discussions every Friday at the Iowa City Public Library, and then all kinds of other activities, a dance performance where the writers collaborate with the dance program at the University of Iowa. In 2 weeks, we have a Global Express where we will have staged readings of the writer's work in the theater. So there's just an endless amount of ways to engage with our writers.
Okay, let's meet a couple of the writers sitting with us at the table, Chris, that you brought along to our studios. Tatiana Troitskaya is a poet and novelist from Ukraine. Welcome to you, Tatiana. Yeah.
Thank you, Ben.
Sitting next to Tatiana is Khaled El-Khamisi, a fiction and nonfiction writer from Egypt. Khaled, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And welcome to Iowa, to both of you. You just arrived a few days ago, your first time in the United States or in Iowa?
Yeah.
It is? Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. How have you been faring the last few days, Tatiana?
Oh, that was great. You know, it was an amazing experience. So many people from different parts of the world. Well, such interesting thoughts all around and these literary evenings.
Okay. Khaled, tell us a little bit about your writing background, how you came to writing. I understand you come from a family of writers.
Exactly. Yes, I'm. My father is one of the greatest poets of the 20th century in Egypt and the Arab world. And my grandfather, from my mother's side, is a poet, critique, novelist, translator. My uncles, my aunts, I think everyone in the family is writers. We are from at least end of 19th century till now. Then I was born into the books. We didn't have walls. We had also only books on. Really, I think I the first time I saw walls when I went to the school.
Really?
Apart of that, yes, we had only books everywhere. And I remember very well when I was 11 months, I eat one book. And it was the first one I was beaten very hardly. I think I eat.
You actually chewed on a book.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I think Tolstoy. At age of 11 months.
Okay, now I'm having trouble separating fact from fiction, nonfiction from fiction.
Exactly. But this is unfortunately nonfiction. It is real.
Tell us, Khalid, a little bit about your writing. What do you like to write about?
It's an extremely difficult question for any writer in the world, because it's impossible to have one sort of writing. I love to write everything. In my first book, Taxi, it was totally related to a very old literary format of the 11th century and 12th century. And my second novel, it's totally different. And the novel what I'm writing now, it's really different. And every time, it's a new adventure. And this is extremely interesting for any writer, to make an adventure every time we make a new project, new literary project.
Tell us about the idea behind the novel that involved the taxi. This is a taxi driver riding around, getting different perspectives on what?
No, it's not a taxi driver. It's a narrator, then he's a rider. Every time he take every chapter, he take a new taxi with a new taxi driver.
Ah.
Then it's a 58 chapters with 58 taxi driver, and then it's a dialogue between a narrator who don't know, with 58 taxi drivers who knows, between brackets for sure, and every time it's a story. And I wrote this book in 2005, 2006. At that time, Egypt was in a very angry moment. The people was really angry in the streets, and this is for what I want to write, a book about the streets of Egypt. And then it was mainly dialogue about the feelings of the people of the streets. And I chose at that time taxi driver because they came from everywhere. In Cairo, for example, we have approximately 300,000 taxi driver. It's a lot. Naturally, for someone from Iowa City, it's a big number, 300,000 only taxi driver, because Cairo is approximately 20 million inhabitants. It's a big, big city.
That's about 6 or 7 times the population of Iowa. Iowa, the state, the population of Cairo.
Exactly. And it's a big, big city.
That's big.
Yeah. And then we speak about approximately 300,000 taxi driver, and they are always in the street. And I was very much interested about this theater moving. It's a moving theater, and it is on the street.
Mm-hmm. Tatiana, tell us about your writing. Come to us from Ukraine. You're a poet, a novelist. How did you come to writing?
Oh, actually, it was completely by chance, yeah. A friend of mine just, found some kind of a contest, and, she proposed me to participate. And I wrote a short story about my great-grandmother and her life before the revolution, before the Tsar, in the times of Tsar. And this novel was sent to Canada, Toronto, and it got the prize. So, actually, literature has always been a part of my family, because my women in my family are philologists. And, I also have a PhD in literature of the 19th century. That's how it happened.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. I was reading a little bit about your background here. In your work, you've explored the work of the American author George R.R. Martin, connected with The Game of Thrones. What interests you about his work?
He is great. Actually, I was a lecturer and I teach a history of English language, and I find a historical background in his novels. I study totemic science in his novels, symbolism of color. So it has lots of things to do with the history of British Isles and America, of course. Mm-hmm. So that is historical part, what is interesting for me.
I wonder if you knew that George R. R. Martin has Iowa roots.
Oh, really?
Yes, he does, I guess. By your reaction, I guess you didn't know. He spent 3 years in Iowa in the late 1970s.
Oh.
Chris, you will know about this, a journalism and English professor at Clark College. It was then called Clark College. now Clark University in Dubuque. So maybe there is a road trip for you. I don't know if there are any relics. We're talking about Game of Thrones, so maybe relics in the Dubuque area.
And if we can't find any relics, we can go to the River Museum, which is really worth the trip.
That's right. Your writers do travel around Iowa, get to know Iowa. This is, for many of the writers, Chris, their first introduction to the United States, and for the vast majority of them, the first introduction to Iowa, the heartland.
Well, we often call Iowa flyover country, but we have the chance in the International Writing Program to show the writers just how beautiful and how varied the landscapes are here. So we make a trip up to the Effigy Mounds. We go to the Dane family farm, hosts a harvest party for the writers. They get a chance to see what this part of the middle of the country is all about.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting, having lived abroad for a number of years myself, that you have consumed media about the United States. That is how a lot of your impressions of perhaps Iowa, the United States, are formed here. And now you're here. Tatiana, any initial surprises? You've only been here a few days about, gosh, I didn't know this was what America was like. Did you have any surprises?
Oh, yeah. We actually have some prejudices about America. So, and they were completely ruined when I came here.
Oh, what a shame.
It became, I just opened the country for me. So it's very, very different.
What, may I ask what prejudices?
That's really complicated.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Khaled, what about you? Your first impressions of Iowa coming here compared to what you knew about it before or didn't know about it?
I came in the United States four times before. From the beginning of 1990s, and I think a part that I came many times in the United States is a very open culture country. Then we know everything about United States by the movies, literature, etc. Plenty of cultural activities, production, made that all the planet know everything about United States. Then I can't say at all that I discovered anything new. I by the movies, by the literature, poems, etc., we know everything about the United States.
Okay.
Then that makes me think we had an Irish playwright here some years ago, and we were at a barbecue out in Hills, and he said, I feel like I know this so well from American film and TV. He said, but it's actually quite different. Yeah. He couldn't quite put his finger on it yet. I think that's part of what happens over the period of time that the writers are here. They begin to put their finger on what it is that seems different from their perceptions.
If you just joined us, we're talking about the latest residence of the International Writing Program's residency program. They've just started a 10-week residency at the University of Iowa. They'll be all around Iowa, a lot of it based in Iowa City. Chris Merrill, the director of the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa, along with several writers in this year's group, and we're so glad to have them. Let's talk a little bit about the craft and how this, because this is an incredibly unique program, Chris, and I want to have the writers chime in on this, to be put in a group not only in Iowa, which they are unfamiliar with, a new place, but also a group of writers. I imagine they have never met each other, or many of them have never met each other. You share the same craft, and you perhaps do not share the same language, but you're all together. What attracts you about this sort of setup, this recipe for writers over the next 10 weeks?
I think it's a really amazing experience because, yes, 30 countries and also many generations. We have writers of age 20s and 30s, 40s, 50s, beginning of 60s. Then all the generations are there also. And many way of writing. And I think every day we have discussions, and this discussion is extremely enriching our experience and our vision to writing and to literature. It seems to be, you began by United Nations, but I can tell you very clearly, it's much better than United Nations.
Did you come here with a goal in mind, or did you say, well, let's let it happen and see what happens?
The second one. Let it happen, because when you have all these writers, and you know before you come that it will be an enriching experience, but how it works, the chemistry between writers. And I can tell you, it's an amazing group. All of us have a beautiful chemistry between us. Every day we have something together. It's a real amazing experience.
Tatiana, tell us about your goals here. Did you come here with specific goals, expectations that you would like to have met? Or?
Oh, actually, I have three of them. So it's not only sharing, like, my literary work. It's also, like, learning some new techniques of writing, because we not always have an access to these techniques, yes? We don't always have this cultural thing to exchange, yes? To exchange some ideas, some writing ideas, because Ukrainians have like a habit of writing, a new way of writing. It's like using complicated words, combining them together, and that is something that nobody understands. That is good. That is perfect writing, yeah? So, and here I met like really, really, well, interesting people, really talented people. The second thing is, of course, English language, as I teach, yeah? So for me, it's like to get some more fluency.
Yes.
And a library, which is a store of everything. And, well, it's something, it's a dream. It's a heaven, like, for me, for a person who could investigate something.
In Ukraine, you just mentioned you teach about the English language, but you write in both languages, Ukrainian and English. How does that shape what you do?
Oh, well, actually, I write in both in Russian and Ukrainian.
Oh, okay.
And the last my new novel I started here, it will be in English. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So actually, yeah, we write in both languages. So my academic works are usually in Russian. Well, used to be in Russian. Now they're in Ukrainian. And my novel is in Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm. When you step into that other language, does a switch flip in your head, in your mind? Do you have two sort of personalities, one that speaks Ukrainian, one Russian better?
Oh, you know, well, I'm from the east of Ukraine, and it's a tricky thing, because here we are bilingual. So for us, both languages are like, the languages that we learn when we are born, yeah? So we don't have difficulties with speaking Russian or Ukrainian. And actually, my novel actually has three dimensions, which is apocalyptical one, about symbolism, historical, which combines three historical periods, the pre-revolutionary Russia, Soviet Ukrainian, as an independent Ukraine, and Orange Revolution, and students' life in Ukraine, which is, believe me, very different from the life of students in the U.S.
What can you tell us about that right now? How different?
Oh, even the hostels are completely different. You can just imagine that in one room, which is like designed for two, we have four people who live together, yeah? And it's very difficult to study, yes, the year. Mm-hmm. So it's a challenge. It's always a challenge.
With you so connected and being fluent in both Russian and Ukrainian here, is there a language component to what we have heard a lot about in our news, the conflict between Russia over territory, the annexation of Crimea? How does language fit into that conflict?
You know, language, it was a tool which was used by politicians to divide Ukraine. We all know that Ukraine has two parts, Western Ukraine and Eastern Ukraine. Western Ukraine has always been more nationalistic and more Ukrainian-speaking. Eastern Ukraine has always been inhabited by people both from Ukraine and of Russian origin. So they are Russian-speaking more, yeah? So there are lots of people who speak Ukrainian, but usually they are from villages. So if we speak of academic environment, it's usually Russian-speaking people. But it doesn't mean they don't know their identity, that they lose their identity. We all wear vishivankas, and we all adore our traditions, our writers, and our cultural stuff. So, and what happened before the Maidan? Before the Maidan, Ukraine was very different. And what was used? It was cultural misunderstanding, what we got. Because people understood after the words of Oleg Tegnegobok, people just understood, they understood that they should, that someone will come and make them speak this Western type of Ukrainian. And they said, no, we won't do that. So that was cultural misunderstanding.
So it's really, they identified so much with the language. The language was the identity.
Yeah, the language was the identity. And so they didn't want someone to, from the West, come, I mean, Western part of Ukraine, come to the East and make them do something that Western people do, because we have different heroes. It's just a historical thing. It's the same country, but with different heroes. For example, Bandera, it's not a hero of, it is a national hero of the west of Ukraine, but it is a criminal for east of Ukraine. You know? So,
interesting.
Yes.
Interesting. Oh, I wish we had more time. We have a few minutes left for this conversation. Khaled, I wanted to go back to you because most of our listeners will know Egypt live on our televisions, experiencing the Arab Spring, the hopes in Cairo throughout Europe of a more democratic Egypt. What is the state of affairs right now for the everyday person in Egypt?
Depression. You said hopes. And naturally, after hopes, we have depression. This is what happened during all the history of mankind. These days, it's the days of depression. You felt and you smelled depression everywhere. When you walk on the streets, you smell the depression. And then I think we need years. What happened from 2011 has plenty of positive things. The ability of express ourselves, the ability to make groups, the ability to make NGOs to develop villages, for example. We have more publishing house, more novels published, more poems, more etc.
Are you allowed as a writer in every form to express yourself freely, or has that been curtailed?
In every country in the world, even in the United States, we have a ceiling for the expressions of the speech. In Egypt, this ceiling is going up and down always. Now, when I speak now, is today, the ceiling is low. But we will force it to go higher, I assure you.
Chris, this is very interesting. We have to take a short break. Chris Merrill of the International Writing Program, the director, thank you so much for bringing in these two writers. We were just hearing from Khaled Al-Khamasi, a fiction and nonfiction writer from Egypt, and also Tatiana Trotskaya, a poet and novelist from Ukraine. We're going to keep a hold of Chris here. We're going to change some places, meet a couple of different writers coming up. We're going to hear from a novelist who calls Mauritius his home. That's an island nation to the east of Madagascar. And also from Hensley Ron Solorzano from Venezuela. That's coming up in just a moment. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're exploring the latest group of participants in the International Writing Program's residency program. Back in just a moment. If you have a question, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, today exploring the International Writing Program at the University of Iowa, headed by Director Christopher Merrill. He is in our studio. We've been talking to some of the writers in the latest residency group over the next 10 weeks. 36 writers from 30 countries based here in Iowa City, but also out to see other parts of Iowa, and with a ton of events that anyone can visit to get to know writers from these 30 different countries. Chris Merrill, before we meet a couple of other writers, tell us about some of the other writers, also some of the events coming up.
Well, Ben, as all the events are free and open to the public, we begin tomorrow with our first panel discussion at the Iowa City Public Library. Khaled will be on that, one of the members of that panel, discussing the right to remove, right to refuge. We have as an Ida Beam, Cordelia Beam visiting professor at the end of September, the wonderful journalist and writer Janine DiGiovanni, who's Newsweek's Mideast bureau chief. She'll be showing a film about Sarajevo. Her new book is called The Morning They Came For Us, which is about her travels in Syria during the war. And then more and more activities, all of which can be found on our website, iwp.uiowa.edu.
Okay, joining us now at the table, two additional writers of the 36 writers visiting Iowa now. Shanaz Patel is with us, a novelist from the island nation of Mauritius. Welcome to you, Shanaz.
Thank you.
And Mauritius is something, a country that we don't hear of often. Tell us where it is.
Well, people often ask me where is Mauritius, and I feel like I should be walking with a map in my pocket and show everybody where it is.
Here's the answer.
But, it's a tiny island. It's a confetti, actually, in the Indian Ocean off the eastern coast of Africa. But in a way, Mauritius is also linked to American history. It might seem strange, but during the War of Independence in the 18th century, boats and people came from Mauritius with the French, because at the time it was Île-de-France, it was a French colony. And so people came in to the United States from Mauritius at that time to help in the War of Independence in
the United States. So the French were siding with the rebellious Americans against the English.
That's it.
And so we have Mauritius natives. How do you call them? Mauritian? Are they called
Mauritians,
them?
Yeah.
Mauritians to thank in part for independence.
Could be said that way.
And how does this background, this history, figure into your writing? Does it?
Well, Mauritius is a very young nation, you could say, because we were a French colony until 1810 and then a British colony until 1968, and we're an independent country since 1968. But there's a story also linked to that, and it's what I've tried talking about in one of my novels also, is that when the British gave independence to Mauritius in the 1960s, they said, okay, we give you independence, but we keep a part of your territory that was situated in the Indian Ocean, the archipelago of the Chagos, because there was a deal between the British and the Americans, because the United States wanted to have these islands. It's very strategically located in the Indian Ocean to control the Middle East. And the United States have established there one of their main military bases in the world, which is called the base of Diego Garcia. And, for example, all the bombings going on Iraq and Afghanistan these last years have been coming from Diego Garcia. But there was a population on these islands, and that population was evicted. And Mauritius is still claiming its sovereignty over these islands. There's a case that's going to the United Nations sometime this year, to the end of the year. And the Chagosians are still fighting to have a right to return and to be compensated. And they have recently they have been in the news because they have a new panel of lawyers fighting for them. And on this panel, there is a lawyer which is quite famous in the person of Amal Clooney, which is the wife of George Clooney. And
so with that background, how did you approach that as a novelist, as a fiction writer, this content?
Well, I'm a journalist also, and I was very interested by that story because I wanted to understand how these people lived through that. I mean, I can just ask people to stop for 1 minute with us right now and think about what if they travel to another country, and then when they want to come back to Iowa, they are told, there's no plane, you're not coming back, your country is closed. So that's what happened to the Chagosians. From one day to the other, they were thrown away from their country.
Because of the military needs. The military needs, in part because of American military needs.
That's it. Mm-hmm. And, America says that it's very important for the security of the free world. And I think it's important also to know that it happened at the expense also of the freedom of a population.
Chris Merrill, you wanted to jump in.
I was going to say that when in our newspapers we read all the time about dispatches from Diego Garcia. Mm-hmm. It is for most Americans just a name mm-hmm. in the middle of the Indian Ocean. The beauty of this program is that we find out there's actually a story behind it, and Shahnaz has written that story. So it gives us Americans a chance to engage on a deeper level with what our history is, how it is continuing to unfold.
Right, and we describe it as a tiny island nation off the coast of Africa, off the coast of Madagascar, but looking at the population, it's got a population almost a third the size of Iowa, so 1.3 million people living in Mauritius, on Mauritius.
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, that's it, 1.3 million. Yeah.
Okay, we have another writer at the table we want to make sure we get to, Hensley Ron Solarzano is with us. He's from Venezuela, not only a fiction writer, but a musician. We're going to hear a little bit of your band in a few minutes when we say goodbye. But before we do that, we want to welcome you. Hensley, welcome to the table and to Iowa.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
You have a dual nationality. You have a German background as well.
Yeah, amazingly so. Yeah.
So why amazingly so?
Oh, because, I was born a Venezuelan. I am Venezuelan, and my grandfather was German. So at some point, I got the passport, and now I get to live in Berlin, for example, or travel without a visa, which is very comfortable.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting because often North Americans, I have found, don't know that just as North America was the target for many German immigrants coming to the Americas, South America has equally a great number of European German immigrants from the 1800s.
Yes, yes, yes. There's a lot of Germans there from before the war. From before the wars,
mm-hmm.
and after the wars, more.
Second World Wars.
Mm-hmm. And there's even Nazis in the hiding, or there were Nazis in hiding there.
Mm-hmm. You know. Tell us a little about your writing, Hensley.
I'm a short story writer, and now I plan my first short novel, and I'm working on that here in Iowa. My themes are violence and Venezuela, mm-hmm. and it's always in a humorous voice, for so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Okay, violence in Venezuela that comes into our news periodically. What is the state of affairs in Venezuela at the moment?
Well, today, 1st of September, there is a big demonstration to throw out the current president, and they're asking for a constitutional right, that it's the referendum revocatorio, and government won't do it. So there is a big manifestation in Caracas today.
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, I know it's hard to generally characterize how your countrymen and women view the United States, but is there a general perception of the great country to the north in North America?
For sure. There's the movies, as one of my fellow writers
again,
said.
The perceptions through our
the
media.
The movies, the music. I think there is a double thing. There is a huge deal of admiration, and there's a huge deal of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes it very interesting. I deal with that in my fiction because we have a lot of history in common, and being here, you know, naivete apart, is just a chance to get into dialogue and get that, like, past, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I would call what you just described a love-hate relationship with the United States. How do you deal with that in your fiction, specifically?
Well, yesterday I was talking to the translator of one of the short stories. It's a girl from the translation course, and she picked, it was her choice, she picked a story that's especially on that, and it's like a mashup from U.S. American movies, you know? And at one point, one of the characters, it's like evil in itself. he says something like, "Don't you know that the best rock and roll is not made by Americans?" And I mean, it's like from the outside world, we want to participate also in all of these big, I don't know, these wonders, you know, rock and roll, hip hop, even movies. And I don't know, it's just like any relationship, it's just hard.
Chris.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things that we also have is on Wednesday evenings on campus, we have a series of programs called Cinematheque, where we invite the writers to bring films from their countries and show them and then talk about those films. Sometimes the films are made out of their own writings. And it gives an Iowa audience a different picture of the film industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Hensley, you have a concrete goal here to do some writing, to get some writing done. Now, having been here a few days, you think you'll be able to live up to that? There's so much going on. Yes. I know from past experience talking with Chris, talking with other writers, you can come here with a notion that you're going to get writing done, but there are a lot of other rich experiences to be had.
Well, yes. I don't know if I'm going to finish the novel, but I'm sure I'm working on it. So,
okay.
And, yeah, it's amazing. There's lots of to learn and lots of experiences to live through.
Shinaz from Mauritius, tell us about your expectations, your goals here. Now you've been here a few days. You've been able to meet the group of writers you'll be spending the next 9 weeks with. What are your expectations now?
I think it's a very stimulating experience. I come from a country, Mauritius is a developing country, and as such, perhaps we have other priorities, but where writing and literature is considered kind of superfluous in a way. And it's so important and so exciting to be in an environment where literature and writers are thought to be important and to be at the core of life. And for me, that's very important. And in all the meetings we're having with other writers, knowing about other cultures, other difficulties, other joys, and literature is life to me. It's only life bigger, more intense. And I have four projects in mind at the moment. I just have to sit down and decide upon what I'm going to tackle first and then next. One thing I know is I would really like to have that novel, Le Silence des Chagos, translated in English, because I think it's important that also people from Britain, from Great Britain and America, get to learn about that story, the story of these people. So it's one project that's well underway. I've met a wonderful young translator, and we're working together, and it's very exciting, and I think that should go through. But then it can happen that I admire and perhaps envy writers who have a set routine every day. They sit from this time to this time, and they write. I'm perhaps a very, very lazy writer, but I can't stay without writing for weeks, and it's all about writing, in fact, because sometimes I say I'm not writing because I'm too busy living.
And then when you do write, is it intense for hours, for days, and then you...
It depends. There's no set thing. It's just that I think that for we writers, writing is just... You know, I like to compare it to the image of there's a cake in French. It's called the millefeuille. It's a kind of layered cake. And through all that we're living, meeting, hearing, someone tells us a story, we hear a confidence on a bus, we hear some music, we see a film, we meet someone and we feel something, and all that comes like layers. And then at one moment you feel like it's taken a real consistency, and that's when the story emerges, and that's where the writing comes. Well, at least it's like that for me. So I don't want to have too many set things. Like I say, I'm going to do this and do this, and I just want to take it in my stride and see what's going to come out of all these mixings and meetings and surprises, because, I mean, living together, 36 writers, is not that easy.
Not that easy? Do tell.
It's funny.
Well, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of talks and singing, but there also can be some tensions and some fights and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting because, I mean, literature is is like the real world, so I don't think why we should be escaping from these things. And it's all there between us every day. And that's part of the adventure, and that's why it's so exciting also.
That's exactly where I wanted to go when you say literature is like the real world. And we've had so much of the real world this last few years in our news. The tumult in the politics, not only here in the United States, but also Germany and Europe with the influx of immigrants.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned Venezuela, all of that. I wonder, Chris Merrill, you've been at the helm of the International Writing Program for more than 15 years now. I don't know, with the intensity of global affairs right now, I'm wondering, literature, how does that tie in? Does it become more important, more significant that we have these connections at these levels?
Well, I think we look to writers to help us navigate things that happen in our lives, whether they are intensely personal or political. And what I love about having such talented writers in town, particularly in the midst of a contentious political season, is that they will bring a different angle of vision to what is going on. And, I mean, remember, one of the first great works we have about America was written by Alexis de Tocqueville, who traveled here in the 19th century and wrote an amazing two-volume book called On Democracy, in which he really diagnosed what was going on in this country, and so much of what he had to say then still applies now. So we have all these writers here paying attention to what's going on in our country, and in one way or another it will no doubt shape their work, but they also are the most reliable witnesses of all because they are standing a little bit outside it and
right,
watching.
Right. Those of us who have been here a long time in this fishbowl, so to speak, may not see what's going on as well as someone introduced from the outside. I don't know if either of you writers have initial impressions that surprise you, having been here a few days. Yes. Hensley, did you get surprised by something, having consumed all the media that would have told you what it would be like here?
I'm amazed that Trump really exists, you know?
That Donald Trump really exists. I mean, you thought it was Hollywood or something?
Yeah, I mean, of course. He has a big production team.
Anything, Shinas, anything that surprised you?
No, I think it's a very exciting time to be here because with the election coming up and there are things happening that seem so intriguing, and I'm really eager to try to get to understand how it works and the audience a politician like Trump has. And I'd like to get to meet people and talk with them and try to understand what is really happening underneath. Mm-hmm. Because it's so surprising.
There's the journalist in you coming out.
Yeah,
exactly.
True.
We want to hear a little bit of your music, Hensley, from your band in just a moment. But well, music and food go together. Do they? what do we have served up to them for typical Iowa food that they may have not had in their homeland? Chris, do you have an idea of that yet?
Well, as I said, we have this wonderful harvest party coming up in October, which resembles an American Thanksgiving. But we have also a space every week where the writers to get together to cook and bring their own cuisine to the table. And so that's part of the conversation.
Okay.
I was also going to just mention in the political terms, next week we do something which is closed just for the writers called Text in Context, where we'll bring in our former Congressman Jim Leach to talk about the political situation, to give them an overview of what's going on.
Okay, the hour has gone far too quickly. I knew it would. Chris Merrill, director of the University of Iowa Writers Program. Two writers joining us this half hour, Hensley Ron Solorzano of Venezuela and also Shinas Patel of Mauritius. And Hensley, we wanted to hear a little bit of your band's music. We have a minute or two. Introduce us to what we're going to hear on the way out.
Well, this is my old rock band. It's called Autopista Sur, which means South Highway. I was the singer and guitarist, and it was a great experience while it lasted. And this is the song called El Mundo Al Revés, which is the upside down world.
Okay, and Hensley, you are the lead vocals and the guitarist in this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and we look forward to perhaps getting in contact with the International Writing Program over the next few weeks. Enjoy your time in Iowa, and hope you're productive as well. Let's listen to a little bit of the music right now. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Emily Woodbury, and Lindsay Moon, with help from Gray Lanta. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We always welcome your comments and questions. You can email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.